From heading out into the wilds of the South Island with fishermen and musterers, through to thunderous dancing in country halls, Geoffrey Paparoa Holman takes us on many an adventure in his new poetry collection. It's called After Hours Trading and The Flying Squad. Small towns, vast landscapes and extreme weather also find a home in his collection. Geoffrey starts with one of the new poems.
In a roadman's hut, iron stove, iron chimney, iron sides, iron reminders of falling shale, of 10-foot snows, of leaking boots and roof rats running, of months alone of a letter writing. In a roadman's hut, the country trembled. In a roadman's hut, the weight was weighed. In a roadman's hut, the heart blew open. Poor pay, poor relations, hours by horse to the nearest station. Little to spend, nowhere to spend it. Busted axles, rum with the coachman. Burning brakes on the downhill section, wild west novels while a candle flickered. Long years, short days, months on end with nothing to say and none to hear it. Only the Kia's ironical cackle, skiing the roof till the grab for the rifle, murdering silence, cracking the valley, fading to sanity, fed by the stars. 100 years, the traffic passes, eyes on the future, sat-nav tracking, blind to the human heart and the beaches, voiceless, vigilant, untold stories, frozen together at one with the snow, keeping up vigil on the open road.
Geoffrey, gosh, you've packed a lot of poetry here, and I know they cover, what I think, just over a decade in a way. What, from 2009, I think I saw one of the sections?
I started writing what became the After Hours Trading section about then, and I decided that, you know, I wanted to write poems that were impersonal but deeply meaningful to me, right? And so they're basically their masks or their dialogues, you know, sort of like Browning wrote these sort of things, didn't he? These poems where they were some voice that someone else was speaking through. So they're South Island poems, right? Basically, and they're rural poems, wilderness poems. They're not urban, then they're not anything to do with cities, really. They're about some sort of primitive level in me, and I guess what I've experienced here. Yeah.
I mean, the weather features, as you would expect with the South, in local weather, I think, one of your first poems. What we'd really like to see is a so-called climate change minister come down here to the Hurunui and do a rain dance.
Yes, well, and that was me being a redneck, right? Channeling redneckery. It's not me.
Was that fun for you, was it?
Yes, it was, because, you know, sort of an alter ego is probably sleeping in my dark depths and waste spaces. But, yeah, because I know that anger is out there, you know, against greenies and that kind of stuff. And so I tried to put myself into that person's psyche, and we'll see. It might annoy some people, but it's not me necessarily what I believe in, but necessarily you have to listen to other people and hear their anger. As we're now finding out with this present situation we're in with COVID.
Are these, can I ask, some of these phrases and ideas that you have woven into here from people that you've met along the way?
Yeah, definitely. But it's kind of like a soundtrack to my life. Like, you know, the one about the guys in the fishing boat and the guys in, you know, coming home chug, chug, chug with the Perkins diesel, lying in the bunk. The boat is rocking, and he's reading a bloody copy of Playboy. When I say bloody, from the, you know, the fish on his hands. And I know this from a friend of mine who worked on the fishing boats. Not that he told me he read Playboy, but I know they did. So it's partly experience. I came to sort of get to know these guys working on the wharves many years ago, unloading the fishing boats. one of my manifestations.
I mean, it's such a remarkable landscape to write about. It's kind of a gift for you, Geoffrey, in many ways, isn't it? I mean, we mentioned the weather, you know, you're writing about snow and the impact on trying to get around, and the buildings and the wildlife, you know, it's wild country.
Yes, and I grew up there, and I don't live there anymore, but it formed me, it shaped me. You know, whenever I go back to the coast and I drive and I'm getting through Moana and coming down towards Stillwater, and suddenly the Paparoa Mountains begin to rise up, and I start mihiing to them. I start talking to them. It's as if something about me got buried there between Blackball and Runanga for those 20 years I lived in either place. And when I go back, it wakes up and says, here we are, you know, welcome home. I'm not romantic about it, but it's just, it's shaping, it's formative.
Well, not romantic at all. I mean, you point out how men have died, you know, for a bucket of birds. You know, there's a high price to be paid for living in the midst of those elements.
Yeah, well, we got invited down to Invercargill and right down south many years ago with Michelle Leggett and some others to do a poetry reading on the marae down there, which is fantastic. But we took a trip across, you know, the strait to Stewart Island and you know, basically, you know, I was only there about 10 minutes on that boat, and it's such a shallow channel but very powerful wave motion. I was green very quickly, you know, and those guys, I know, they go fishing on those Titi Islands, and it's historic, you know, it's what Ngāi Tahu and what Māori have always done, and it's dangerous, right? And the boats do flip. People do drown. Yeah, and I have, you know, having worked on the wharves and watched fishing boats come in, I have a huge respect for those guys. My dad's naval background and all that stuff. I'm a Navy kid, so I have a respect for seamen.
You have a love of country halls too, as do I. And I think this is one of the aspects of rural life that maybe is a little romanticised, but I get a sense in a way that the country halls are more appreciated now than they have been in the past, and some are being restored, and touring music groups and performing groups love it when they can have a good old country hall to perform in.
Well, the Stillwater Hall, you know, between you know, Greymouth and Blackpool on that road, was famous for its sprung floor. People would get going and they would make the floor bounce. And, yeah, they had these fantastic suppers afterwards, which, you know, basically the women prepared. And they were just awesome, awesome occasions. And you'd get to the stage where you'd have, in the 60s, you'd get bands coming out from Christchurch with electric guitars and long hair. And you'd get these redneck mill hands wanting to go out and thump them because they were girls. I mean, it was primitive, but it was exciting. It was exotic. And to us as little kids, I mean, the big thing was, if my parents went to them, they would come home and bring the leftovers, and we would have the supper leftovers. So they had these shoe boxes full of savouries and cakes and, you know, lamingtons and pies, and so we loved them even before we could get into the hall.
You're giving us impressions of an entire town. So we mentioned that the rednecks who start the collection, and then a few poems later, we're on the mobile library with the library lady who sees it all as she comes through a town, or the local cop, Officer O'Dell. So it's just delightful, the many aspects of small town New Zealand life.
Well, in fact, I'm in contact with the real Officer O'Dell's daughter, who's about my age and lives in Christchurch. But, you know, and she's seen the poem and approved of it. But it's not about him in a sense, but it's a composite, right? And I turn him into a PTSD war veteran who's drinking whiskey at night to get over the fact that he's gone out and had to shoot, you know, watch people shoot themselves. So there's a whole lot of things twisted into that poem about the local cop. But for me, there's real respect and aroha for what he had to deal with. And I imagine what it was like for him to go back and write the records of what had happened. So there he is with his dog. and the Blackpool police station is still there, occupied by others. But the jail is still out the back. It was a little woodshed with wooden bars. So if anybody got drunk and troublesome, they chuck him in there for the night, let them out in the morning. So, yeah, he's a real figure to me, that person, even though I've imagined him from various parts.
There's such a range within here, Geoffrey, and one of the later poems, The Price of Love, is a love story, you know, a parting of the ways of an elderly couple, the sheer grief of losing somebody with whom you've had such a long life.
Yeah, well, it was written in the aftermath of my sister's death in June to her long-term husband. They'd been together for 50 years, you know, and I didn't address it to him personally, but it came out of that. And it's in a ballad form. It's pretty much a narrative poem, but whatever people find in it in terms of their own loss and grief, that's fine. But for me, it was a kind of, was a bloodletting. It's still very raw, you know, it's still on. At this time for my sister's husband and for all of us.
You've got two poems about Nelson Mandela.
The mouse writes of Mandela. He gives me his crusts every meal. I've come to trust him. He stays quite still in the seconds it takes for me to grab the bread and run. I'm old now for a mouse. so is he for a man. I know I will die, I know he will die. What I can reveal about this human is that he fed all the jail's small creatures. Mandela writes of the mouse, "You are my companion here. When you feed, I'm not alone. If I die in here, I can say the mice were lovers. They came to me in my need, and we shared the moonlight." Written for the Kashmir High School Writers Group, 27/9/2017.
Carbide Press is published After Hours Trading and the Flying Squad by Jeffrey Papaloa-Holman.